Hello and welcome to Cubicle Confidential, advice for the working stiff. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-hosts, starting with W's, the wonderful, the wily, and the sometimes willful, Mary Abajay.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mary Abajay, and I'm going to introduce you to my co-host, the wonderful, the wacky, and the sometimes willful, Chris DeSantis. Was it obvious that I didn't do my homework on this one? Was that too obvious?
It was. It's a little obvious. This is my third version of this introduction for this show. Sometimes you just get off to a funny start.
Well, what's a word that starts with W that an error-prone word that would describe your inability to whip out the introduction?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wacky? No, wanky?
Wonky. You were a little wonky. Yeah,
that's
so this is Chris DeSantis, the wonderful, wacky, and sometimes wonky co-host of Cubicle Confidential.
Exactly. So anyway, we're back together here. We're back, people. Hey, Mary, how was your week?
Hey, Chris DeSantis. You know what? It was a long week. My clients, I had to be on a stage every day this week, or whether virtual or in person. People, there is not, I love that you want me, but I'm just tired. I'm old, Chris DeSantis. Pizzazzing people every day was really exhausting. So I'm
was
glad
it
it's
around
the
country and
no, it was all in the DC based area.
Oh, that's good. At
least these were really nice gigs, and they weren't all like super long or like huge stages. They were just like, it was just work every day.
Yeah. This week I'm going to LA and then I'm going to Charleston. You ever been to Charleston?
Never. You do a lot more travel. Like I do a lot more DC based work, but you don't, you really, almost all of your work is travel, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd say 80% of the time I'm on the road. Yeah. And then again, the rest is either local or virtual.
Yeah. I'm about 60 to 70% local, and then 30% to 40% travel. So mine's flipped.
I got a lot more miles than you.
I'm sure you do. Yeah. I'm sure you are flying first class every time. I'm
living
sure
the
you're
dream,
actually
people.
You probably have enough miles to actually sit with the captain.
although on this one airline they give you these bonus points that you can't use. I mean, it's just there's never a seat for whatever you try to upgrade with it. I just find it terribly frustrating. But
yeah, you know, I usually, if I'm going to use my miles, I just buy the ticket outright with the miles. Because using them to like upgrade is always really hard.
Yeah, because you only get the possibility of an upgrade.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want a possibility.
All right. I know. I want that first class seat. Damn it.
I know. Here's me whining. Oh, speaking of whining, there's going to be some of that in this particular episode. This one is on the new young.
Oh my God. You know, I got to gander at the questions and talk about whining. That's the W's we should have used for this show.
By the way, we're not referring to the new young as whining, but rather whining about the new young might be more.
One of the questions has a new young whining.
Oh yeah, there's that.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to it. These are a collection of very diverse issues with the new. I say the new young because they're not all identified as either millennial or Gen Z, but there's some inference in here that some of them are.
You know, I hate whining. I hate it so much, and I hate complaining, and I hate carping. It drives me crazy. Because
isn't that what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I am. I am. You know, I cannot be with people who are chronic complainers.
Oh yeah.
It just ticks me. It triggers me. And it triggers me because don't complain, do something about it. So I always tell people, like, it's inside of every complaint is a request. Find it and make it. Sitting back and complaining about things, I think, depowers you, right?
Disempowers you.
But if you could find out what the request inside your complaint is and make it, I think that empowers you. So I have a hard time being with people who just chronically complain. I don't mind hearing a complaint or two occasionally, but you know, we all know people that do nothing but complain. My husband. you think you heard that?
No.
So, how about you? What's your position on now that
I
just complained
I'm with
about
you.
Complainers?
I end up sort of listening and sort of bearing with it and then saying, what is it you wanted to do about that?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about that? Because at some point you have to stop them, say.
And then they have nothing to say, do they?
Yeah, because then, or you could always say, "Is this? Are you just venting, or do you want my advice?"
Yeah,
you know, because you want to, you would like to end it at some point.
Yeah,
yeah,
at some point sooner rather than later. Yeah. Speaking of ending it, I'm sure our listeners are ready for us to end the chit chat and get with the question.
Are you ready then? Okay,
I'm ready.
Okay.
Dear Chris and Mary, this might be a question for Chris since he's talked about generational differences in a previous show. What the heck is being triggered? I had a weird experience at a new employee orientation session. I was explaining possible consequences for not storing equipment properly. We work in a manufacturing facility with robotic equipment on the line, and so misplaced tools can be hazardous. One of the consequences is that you can lose a limb. Well, that just set this one young lady off. She goes to HR and claims she was triggered by being exposed to violent scenarios. HR comes down on me as if it was intentional in setting her off. What the fuck? Doesn't safety trump feeling triggered? Should I talk to HR, my boss, this delicate employee, or simply don't talk about the consequences at all? Signed, Triggers. A horse in Houston.
Oh, I get it. The horse trigger. Got it. Got it. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is Christ on a bike. Like this, this triggered me. It really did trigger me. And probably, I'm on trigger side here. So, you know, honestly, I'd go to my boss and tell them that the HR person just triggered me.
Actually, that's an interesting thing to say.
Been triggered by the HR person. And then I'd call OSHA and tell them that my employer won't let me talk about the consequences of poor safety practices.
Bam, wow.
Mic drop. No, that's what I would do in my, you know, fantasy mind. But I do think that this is a little bit beyond ridiculous. And of course, I'm assuming that Trigger was professional when he talked about dismemberment. Like,
I'm sure he didn't show
pictures of like blood spurting out of people's stumps as their arm got torn off by the robot. So I'm assuming he was professional about this. You know, so I think you do need to talk with your boss and the HR person. I would leave the delicate flower alone at this moment, but I would go to the boss and I would have a meeting with both of them at the same time. And I would explain the situation. I would explain like the importance of having direct conversations about safety with the staff. You have OSHA requirements, you have insurance requirements, and the boss needs to know that the HR person may not have a full understanding of the importance of these conversations. So I would nip it in the bud together so that you're not creating a triangle. Mm-hmm. And I would even then ask the HR person directly, you know, how would he, she, or they prefer you have a conversation about consequences or safety? And how would her idea of talking about this, how would that align to OSHA's requirements? OSHA, by the way, people's Office for Safety and Hazardous Administration, OSHA's the one that enforces safety regulations. Like there are safety regulations and safety education that you have to do if you want to maintain good OSHA standing. And so I actually think you need to fight this out for a bit. I think you need to stand your ground and I think you need to escalate this. And I think you might even decide to double down and put up pictures of lost bleeding limbs and stumps on the bulletin board, you know, with the big like red arrow over that. But yeah, I think
partial employee of the month.
I think that the HR person is probably well-intentioned, but this is bullshit.
Yeah. Okay. I like your answers, Mary. I'd like to back this up a little bit for my answer because I'd like to add something, a different layer to this because I think this is just the first foray in what will happen again and again.
Because of the Gen Z. Young lady. Explain to our listeners what means to be triggered by this generation.
Yeah. This triggering, if you want to read about it, I thought the best evidence of this was in the book called The Coddling of the American Mind. That's Jonathan Haidt's book on, really, he talks about young people in colleges. And I, at the time when I had read it a few years ago, I'd read it thinking, wow, his examples seem anecdotal. And I can't believe that these safe spaces existed. Not I can't believe it, but I was a little skeptical of the notion of people not wanting to be triggered in the sense that hearing things they don't want to hear, hearing different voices they don't want to hear, voices heard from, meaning that they didn't want to have people on the campus, let's say, that had views that were antithetical to what they believed in and things like that. This, of course, seems to have taken hold in a lot of American universities, and therefore there's a pushback against, again, free speech to some degree. This, I think, will have ramifications in the workplace because they will say, wow, I heard things I didn't want to hear. That was hurtful to me. And this hurtful, I also think, ties to what's going to happen in mental health, because mental health is more prominent as something that young people are concerned about, meaning they'll talk about it more. They want to make sure the companies are really engaging in mental health and making sure I'm not just healthy in terms of my mental health is taken care of, my physical well-being is concerned here. So the whole sort of the entity of who I am is considered. And I think that's going to become more and more prevalent. So this is just an errant example of somebody's reaction to feeling unsafe, as it were. So I think the larger discussion is going to have to take place in an organization to say, how do we deal with this situation, these situations going forward? Because as I think Mary said, look, there are things we have to do and know if we are going to work at all. There are consequences. And if we don't talk about what consequences are for not doing certain things, then we will be engaging in those consequences. We'll have those consequences. So I think it's an interesting discussion. I also think, and just as a thought, is that there are already young people working there at the organization. Maybe you should talk to them and say, hey, here's what we're trying to achieve, and here's the kind of pushback we're getting. How do we frame this message in a way that's palatable to the people that are coming in and your age group? You see, bring them into the conversation, because I think they understand what the other party is feeling, and they also understand how to frame it in a way that they can sort of accept the message.
Yeah, I think first of all, thank you for sharing with us like the kind of the zeitgeist around the triggering and the generations. And I think it's true. And I would say, yes, in terms of, you know, a lot of different sort of company policies or things, you absolutely want to make sure you're messaging it with the young people. And I love the idea of bringing other young people to do it. I think in this particular case, though, it's just like, but I know this is just a symptom of saying.
No,
but in this particular
case,
it's just like, really?
Really? Exactly.
Get rid of the snowflake. You know, and this, I think, is maybe because of my Gen X-iness. I don't have a lot of empathy for people who get triggered by things they don't want to hear.
I agree with you.
I just, you know, and I know that's wrong, but it's like, if we make every space, like if we're all so concerned about everybody's individual feelings, like I just think we are not building strong, resilient people. And I know that sounds old, and I know you people are going to write
Mary.
Me, but it's just
in
like,
fact,
tough it out. Pull up your big girl boy other pants and like...
Well, this is, you agree with the University of Chicago. They have a policy.
Really?
Their policy on their campus is, look, this is free speech, and I know it's uncomfortable. Ideas will be presented to you that you do not like. The whole point of, though, is that you understand that there are different perspectives, not that you have to agree with them, but you have to hear them.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, I think that's the way we should be, because if we are absent of those other perspectives, we don't understand.
Yeah.
And that is really, and then we balkanize. We are in an echo chamber of agreement. So I'm with you on this.
And this is where America's going, the echo chamber. And the last thing I'll say about this is that, you know, I think we've gone so far over to the side that the company, the corporation, the organization must take care of all of your emotional and psychological needs.
Yeah.
And while I think that we need to be a little bit more on this side than on the other side where they just treat you like a cog, I do think it's important that we don't get so touchy-feely in our workplaces that our workplaces cease to actually be able to be workplaces and make money and give people jobs. So I just think...
Yeah, I think your point, Mary, is that, look, keep our priorities the right priority. First, the work, be productive, you know, attend to our clients, attend to the people we serve, and do it in a way that is humane and shows respect for others. So it's a cascade of priorities.
But it's also, as individuals coming into a workplace, all the responsibility is not on the employer to make it a happy, wonderful place. Like, we as employees also have some responsibility to partner with our employees in order to create positive culture, to, you know, create accountability, things like that.
I like that. We can go on. The two of us can go on and on about this particular thing.
I know,
but as it stands with this person, I like Mary's point. Put on your big girl boots.
Yeah.
Keep
your limbs close to you.
Keep your limbs close. Okay. All right. That was good.
That was a good one. That was a good
ready
question.
For another one?
Thanks, Trigger. Yep.
Hi. I'm in IT at a mid-sized law firm. I just hired a new employee who, because of the layoffs in the tech industry, is working below her capabilities. I know this because she hasn't been here in a month, and she's found half a dozen serious flaws in IT systems. I should be happy because this is great stuff. It's just that how she's sharing it isn't doing much for my reputation or respectful of the efforts of my team that has put so much work to make this place secure. Frankly, no one IT can stand her. While she may be right, she makes people feel stupid, and they are not. She just knows more. I would love to keep her because her contributions are amazing, but her behavior is doing serious damage to the morale of our team. Can I have it both ways? Signed, hacked off by her hacking in Palo Alto.
First of all, kudos, applause, standing O for that like title, hacked off by your hacking. Hacked off, you have outdone yourself. If only they had written in from Hackensack.
Oh, wouldn't that have been funny? Hacked off, yeah. And then you have to say it three times.
Yeah, we might change it just for them, just because I think it's funny. So this is an interesting question, and really, this is classic intent versus impact, right? This is classic, like her intention, I'm sure, is swell, a positive intention. She's trying to help make the IT situation better. But her impact, not so swell, pretty negative. So I think that there are two issues I'd like to see you hacked off separate for her, because I think they're actually two kind of different conversations. They could happen at the same time, but they're a different thing. One is the conversation about when she talks to the larger organization about the tech problems that she's uncovered, right? Mm-hmm. So that's issue one. The second one is how she interacts and speaks with her IT colleagues in the team. Mm-hmm. So I would just separate those to have these conversations. For the first issue, how she discusses the IT issues with the organization at large, you need to create some boundaries about who, how, and when she discusses these. If it was me, if I were you hacked off, I would request that any IT flaws or errors or bugs that she finds, she comes to me first and discusses them. And then together we create a mitigation plan, and we can share that with a larger organization once we know how we're solving the problem. I would absolutely let her know and demonstrate to her that I'm going to give her all the credit for finding it. I just want the appropriate way to handle these is come to me first, so as a department, we can show that we are creating a robust response and fixing these things that we can to do that. So I think it's about making her understand that we have to address and communicate issues appropriately, and this is the appropriate way to do that. So that would be a very strong request I would make for her. For the second issue, for how she interacts with her team, I think this is a classic behavioral feedback situation. Situation, behavior, impact. So I want you to make her aware of how her behavior is being perceived and how it's impacting other people around her on the team. Also, how that impact then impacts the teamwork, how they feel about her, and how her teamwork impacts her ability to be successful in this role, and quite frankly, in any role in any organization. So help her find better ways to have these conversations with her teammates to showcase her talents. I would also say to her, one of the human is to put this in the framework of neuropsychological needs, since she's kind of a techie, and that's the need for status. So human beings need to feel that they are in good standing with other human beings, that in relation to you, that I have at least equal status of you. And when she talks down to them, or when they're perceived that she's talking down to them, that's going to make them stupid. That's going to step on their status, and that's going to put them into the your amygdala response, and it's going to make them fight or flight. So you want to say, this is just something, let's think about how you talk to them. And I learned this lesson in the 10th grade. I had a 10th grade world history teacher that said to me, Mary, you can be right all the time, or you could have some friends.
That's good advice. I like that.
Yeah. So that's what I would say. Like, just let her know that how she's interacting with her people is stepping on their status, and that's not going to be good for building relationships.
No, I think your advice was really spot on here, because I will reiterate some of that. First of all, let me, because I think you had two points to this. One was the coaching issue. I love that. This is a coaching issue. And yeah. I like that what you said, Mary, rather than her going to talk to somebody about this issue up front that she noticed a flaw or whatever that is. She run it past the other person. But I would let the boss play the role of the other person. I would say, okay, I'm going to play Joe. You're going to go talk to Joe about this thing. So you tell me how you think about it. I'm going to tell you how I, as Joe, would have reacted to what you said to me the way you said it.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
And this way she can start to see, because she has to understand there's a distinction between internal self-awareness and external self-awareness. Yeah. How I see myself, how others see me.
Impact,
and which I love that. So that way she can sort of start to learn that, okay, look, it's tough. You got to tell this young person, it's tough for you on many levels. One, gender is not in your favor because you're in the minority in terms of software business or IT jobs. Three of four jobs are men. So you've got that as a deficit. You're young. You're new here. These people have been here years, as young and new. You know more than them too. So you're now in a position where you're dealing with people above you that don't know as much as about you. And you've got this really, I will say, assertive interpersonal style.
Yeah.
And so they're not used to any of these things, because what you're coming off as is high competent and low warmth. And what their expectation of you is competent and high warmth. And you're falling outside of what they think the expectation of you should be.
Yeah.
So I think that these are challenges for you. Now, another thing I might do I would find somebody in the organization who is her at an older age. Because I don't want her to change who she is. I think she's a smart and competent individual. I just want her to find somebody to say, how could I adapt the aspects of who I am in the different situations in which I'm engaged in? You see, I think if she has a role model that says, oh yeah, what I really want to say to this person, you're an idiot. But here's what I've learned to say in this environment with people like that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She has a mentor that understands her from the core of who she is. So, and to your point, it's all about knowing where you are and what aspects of yourself that you can bring forward in the environment we are in.
Yeah. Well, this is just classic, this is relationship management. I mean, the work world is a social system. And if she is not working, if she is pushing people away, she's actually not doing herself any favors. We need to be able to work with people. And there's a way to tell people, you got to know your audience too. There's a way to say things that people will be able to hear it and accept it. And then there's a way you can say things that's just going to shut people down and shut their hearts and minds to you. And that's not helpful either. So I think I agree with you, Chris. It's not about changing who you are. We're not asking you to be warm and fuzzy. What we're asking you to do is to be more strategic in how you interact and communicate with people so that you are building and not tearing down.
Yeah. And the other thing that comes to my mind to add to that is that keep in mind, this might be because you alluded to it, Mary, a neurodiversity issue.
Yeah.
Is that maybe she's somewhere on this sort of not aware of what her impact is relative to what she is saying to others.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why the coaching would help. That's why a role model would help. Because this person...
But we both agree that Hackdoff needs to address these two issues.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. There is no question. Because this person has great capabilities. And I think if I understood her more, meaning if I were the person sitting across from her and she's sort of telling me what I did wrong, but I had a better grasp of who she was, I might see that differently. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I might be more appreciative of
that. Well, in that scenario, doing some more team building, doing some everyone can create my SOP of me, here's my operating system. I think that can be very helpful when we can have those conversations, because it could just be personality. But I'm glad you mentioned the gender thing, because my guess is there's a lot of the male techies who are probably just as direct. If it comes from a man,
exactly.
I think it's, yeah.
So this
I think
is why you have to say, okay. The other thing is, we don't know where she came from.
Yeah.
She might have come from a culture where this was what you did. And this is a law firm. And maybe this law firm has a very different sensibility. So, but I like that in essence, Mary is saying, filter her for a while and then educate her through that filter. Filter her, meaning that get the information to you directly, filter that, work with her through that.
No. I think there's two issues. I don't think that she, as an employee, should be going to tell the managing partners, oh, I just found a bug.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, no.
He's the filter.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't think that she should ever be allowed to do that.
I don't disagree with that at all.
I think that, as a department, they need to...
Chain of command.
Yeah, there needs to be a chain of command, but there also just needs to be, we need to look like a cohesive group.
Absolutely.
That are working on that.
No, absolutely. And that alludes to your point about team building as well. Oh, that was good.
All right, that was a good one. All right.
That was good.
She exhausted me. So I think we have time for one more.
Well, make it an easy one. What was that? What was the acronym again? SBA, right?
SBA? Oh, SBI, Situation, Behavior, Impact.
That's a good one. SBI, Situation, Behavior, Impact. Remember that, people. Okay. Okay, ready? One more?
I'm ready.
Hello, Mary and Chris. My mother suggested I write to you since she's a fan of your podcast, and she thought you might know what to do. I'm 23, and I just started working at an accounting firm in LA. My new boss is, according to her, a millennial, and so she wanted to understand what makes us Gen Z tick. I had no idea what she was asking. I don't see myself as a category or even part of a group. I am only who I am, and that's basically what I told her. She gives me this odd look and backs away. I know she thinks I have an attitude problem. I don't. I just think she's being naive. How do I explain who I am without getting into what I may or may not be based on what she read about Gen Z? Signed, No Z in LA.
No Z. Oh, that's good.
That's good.
Well, you know, first of all, how Gen Z of you to be triggered so easily?
That's funny. Yeah, right. Right.
Come on. All right. So I'm probably going to be very unpopular with this, but I would say, first of all, give your manager a break. Get off of your high triggered horse. Bring it down. Assume positive intent. I'm guessing your manager was only doing her best to bridge a generational gap, right? To be like, to learn more about your generation. And you instead decided to take umbrage at that because you're not your generation. I get it. Mm-hmm. So instead of being like that, you could have simply said, you know, I'm not sure what makes my generation cohort tick, but I know what makes me tick, which I'm happy to share with you. Like, you could have said it so much nicer, you know.
Yeah,
you don't have to believe in the generational stuff. You know, and also your boss clearly has some millennial affiliation because they identified as a millennial. So instead of getting all like, you could have been like taking this opportunity to learn more about her perspectives at work. You could say like, gosh, I don't really know that much about the Generation Z, but I'd love to learn more about the millennial generation. Like, are there like theories, like learn, open this up. You know, or another option to say is, you know, I don't really know much about Generation Z, but I'm happy to pull some articles, or maybe we could get the other Gen Zers in the office together to see if we can pull any themes or similarities. In short, what you've done here, Nosy, is you've missed a perfect opportunity to start to manage up. Instead of like using this as an opportunity to create some kind of a dialogue and build some kind of relationship with your boss, you decided to be a brat. This was a great opportunity to provide some value and you kind of blew it, but it ain't too late. So if I were you, I'd go back to the boss and say, hey, you know, I've been thinking about your question about Gen Z and I have a few thoughts. And that's when you say, why don't we pull together some articles? Why don't we meet with the other Gen Zs? You know, why don't we all talk about our perspectives and then start it from there? So you haven't quite blown it yet, but you almost did.
Yeah, I'm with Mary. Answered this so thoroughly. There's
really? And you're the generational expert. I was
I think you were spot on everything you've said. I mean, this is when great minds think alike. But I really agree. I understand her reaction, feeling that she's been categorized. No one likes to be generalized. And I get that. But Mary's point is absolutely correct. You know, you've got to have a poker face here in terms of, look, you cannot react defensively to every time somebody says something that triggers you, as it were, because people will stop wanting to be around you. And that's a problem. So I like Mary's point about, okay, you know, go back to this conversation. You know, I know it didn't go well. I'm sorry. I reacted in a way that I thought, look, this, I just thought I was shoved into a category, which I'm not. And can we start again? I like that. Start again. Can I understand what you're about? You know, tell me what you're about. By the way, when she tells you what she's about, what you're hearing her say is what she wants to hear from you. She's projecting. So she's going to project some of her interest about who she is, and you should describe who you are in return as you are comfortable doing so. You don't have to overly self-reveal. All she's trying to do is really get, as you said, you know, Mary said, she wants to get to know you. Give her the benefit of the doubt and allow her to do that. This was a good intention.
Yeah.
This was a good intention. So, but now, in her defense as well, and in what you do as well, because she's not the only one here who does this. We all use heuristics. Heuristics.
Yeah, say more about that. Yeah.
Yes. Heuristics are, we categorize people all throughout the day. When you walk down a street, if you see somebody coming towards you who may look in some way dangerous, you don't say, well, I'm just making assumptions about them. I'm just going to walk on forward towards them. No, you don't. You say, wow, there's something here that I'm going to move around. Now, do you know that as a fact? No, that's an assumption. That's an assumption. So the idea here is everyone has to live with some level of assumption throughout the day. She's just trying to say, are my assumptions correct or am I wrong? And do I have to reevaluate those things?
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to get past assumption into who you actually are in her midst.
And, you know, in the work world, I know this person's new to it, but, you know, the generational differences has taken quite a hold in terms of a framework of differences. So whether you like it or not, the conversation is out there. And Chris, so, you know, I'm sure since you are the generational expert, having written the book, Navigating Generation, or Why I Find You Annoying, what do you say to people that are like, oh, it's poppycock?
Well, again, that's a good question, Mary, because you have to separate what is perceptually different and what is actually different, and who is this person in front of me. So there's these layers. The perceptual thing is the press picks out the weirdest thing about a group. You know, millennials are snowflakes. Millennials are entitled. Millennials, you know, don't eat, you know, anything but avocado toast. Okay, you start hearing those things, you think, oh, that must be who they are, right? And then you start reading about them, said, oh, this is what millennials are. Well, now that we have a generalization here, and then you meet the person and you think, well, that must be who you are, and you only look at them through the lens of confirmation. You say, ah, he did that or she did that. That's what a millennial does. So that must be what you are. So then you start to ascribe to them other aspects that may or may not be part of who they are. So we have to learn to say what is actually different about you.
Well, that was my point. Like, there are actual differences.
There are some differences.
And they're not as huge as people make them out to be. But I think what people need to understand is that we've all grown up in a different time, right? We've grown up in a different time. We've entered the work world at a different in a different state, if you will. And that does have a little bit of impact. How big is up to you all to decide. But right, that does impact how we view and see work and the role that work has in our lives. Is that correct?
Let's pick on Mary. Mary is a classic Gen Xer.
Classic.
She gets super irritated when somebody can't figure it out. Just figure it out. Because she is. If you're a Gen Xer, if you're classic to the category, a latchkey kid, think that way. You've been on your own a lot, and so you just had to figure it out all the time. Now you're these other kids who are raised in a different parental model, where they're much more engaged in dialogue and working with their parents and through the issues together. All of a sudden, that collaborative dialogue model is very different, so they want to work with you.
Yeah.
And so when these two come into contact with each other, all of a sudden one thinks, wow, you're so needy, or wow, you're so aloof. Okay. Hey, we're just different in one category.
Yeah. I love that. Chris DeSantis, solving the world's generational problems in one podcast. So
one podcast,
speaking
baby.
Of problems, we'll have a problem soon if we don't get off this
you
show. This was really fun, though. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, this is good.
So listeners, keep writing us your questions. We love them. And you know who else loves them? Our executive producer, Mr. Jack Edinger. So thank you, Jack, for all the work you've done for us. If you have a workplace question, a cubicle dilemma, or a generational friction point, give us a shout. No questions too easy, no questions too hard, and quite frankly, as of today, no questions too salty. And there are lots of ways to reach us. You could email us to info@cubicleconfidential.com. You could tweet us @cubicleconfide1 or connect with us on LinkedIn. People, we are easy to find. So until we see you next time, we want you to be kind, work hard, don't make assumptions about other people, and if you can't,
call us.
All right, see you next week.